All right, I see all the people coming in. A warm welcome here from Malaga, Spain. This is the third Liquid Experience call entitled Sustainability. Is it sustainable? My name is Roger. I'll be leading you through this session. And as always, we have four wonderful guests with us, which I will introduce in a moment. But first, I want to tell you how I first encountered the term sustainability. And that was in the mid-80s of the last century, when I learned that the German forest was dying. Well, anyway, so imagine me like 30 years younger or 40, right? And I'm sitting in the high school and I'm listening to this teacher giving a talk about the deteriorating state of the German forest. Now, to understand the significance of that statement, you must know that the forest is part of our national cultural identity. We have a lot of forest covering one third of our territory, and we have a lot of fairy tales and stories about the forest, and usually presenting it in this negative, frightening way for which we all love German culture so much. So the forest is dark and eerie, and it makes strange noises. And if you're lucky enough to escape the wolves who are trying to devour you, you will for sure be robbed and murdered by the bandits that live in the forest and hiding there from the police. And the forest is also the place where the poor parents abandon their little children, and the little children, get lost in the darkness, and they have to fight evil ghosts and witches that try to enslave them and put them in the kitchen oven. So a terrible place. But me and my friends, we heard these fairy tales from the Grimm brothers, from the grandparents, and we grew up in an area called Hunsrück. That's an upland in the Rhineland Palatine. And when we learned that afternoon in the 80s that the forest, our German forest, was about to die, we were devastated. That was a terrible thing to learn. We heard that, the air pollution produces sour rain, and the sour rain eats the forest. And however, at the end of his presentation, the teacher said that there is one thing that can save the German forest, and that is Nachhaltigkeit. So in other words, we had to stop polluting the air, and we had to start strengthening the regenerative powers of our trees. Now, that afternoon, after the lecture, I went back home and I checked the term Nachhaltigkeit in our Duden. At that time, there wasn't an internet, so you actually had to get the heavy encyclopedias out of the shelves and then look for the term. And I learned that indeed Nachhaltigkeit is a German idea. Sustainability is a translation that came later. It's a term that was first used in a book written by a Prussian civil servant with the name of Hans Karl von Karlowitz in the year 1713. And he talked about how to preserve the forest and make best use of it. And already at that moment, I thought, how strange is that? Since the beginning of the 18th century, we know what Nachhaltigkeit means for the forest, but apparently we haven't implemented it because the sour rain is eating away at our trees. Now, fast forward 30 years. February of this year, 2021, I'm sitting in my TV chair here in Malaga watching the German evening news. And imagine my surprise when I learned that the forest today, the German forest today, is doing even worse than it was in the 80s. So in the mid-80s, they started recording the state of the forest because it was doing so poorly. And now they tell us that 30 years later, it's doing even worse because only 21% of the trees' crowns are intact. So most trees are sick from storms, from drought, and from the boar beetle. So when I learned that, I got to say, then a part of me lost kind of faith in the idea of sustainability, and a kind of a negative, skeptical, a cynical, one might say, very German Roger was born. I don't know if you saw the video that I made kind of with the positive Roger who believes in sustainability and the negative Roger says it's all smoke and mirror. Now, that negative critical Roger was born in that moment when I learned that for over 300 years, since 1713, we basically know what needs to happen to save the forest, but we don't seem to be doing it. And that's our topic for today in this call. We want to kind of explore the tension between knowing and doing. And we want to do that with our guests. So now is the moment when I introduce our panelists. Let me start with Stefan Ganders. Stefan is joining us from Berlin. He's holding the position of, I think, Corporate Director of Corporate Affairs at Samsung Electronics, which is a subsidiary of the South Korean multinational conglomerate. We have with us Tatjana Gravenstein. She's a sustainability expert and head of public affairs at ING, a Dutch financial corporation headquartered in Amsterdam, and she's joining us from Frankfurt. Welcome, Tatjana. We have with us Jerome Raguin. He lives in Basel, serves as vice president and sustainability lead at Elevate, a US-based legal service and technology and consulting company. And last but not least, Noemi Schmutzer, a managing director partner in Zurich at Accenture, the global Fortune 500 consulting company headquartered in Ireland. A warm welcome to the four of you. Welcome to the show. Great to have you. Stefan, let me start with you. I was already laughing because I'm doing this American moderator thing, but hey, that's my thing. I think it can be entertaining and informative at the same time. So, Stefan, you get a little hit of the negative Roger right away. So, one way to understand sustainability is to overcome the throwaway mentality. We could look at, electronic devices, smartphones, for example. We're used to kind of getting the new model that comes out every couple of years because it's brighter, nicer, has more functions. And one way to be more sustainable would be, let's just keep our devices longer. Let's use them until they really break and there's no other way than to get a new one instead of just replacing them every couple of years. But when I think about that approach from the perspective of the manufacturing companies and industries, it seems to me sustainability is not in their economic interest, because if people buy new phones every 2 years, you can sell more phones and you can make more money. So question to you, how serious is Samsung about sustainability? And if it is serious, which I have no doubt you will be telling me, but why? What's in it for the manufacturing industry?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Roger, that you have invited me and giving me the opportunity to be here and speak about sustainability from the perspective of Samsung. Well, I think you made a very valid point. The topic of throwaway mentality, on the one hand, is it really in line with long-lasting products or not? I think which is pretty essential to point out here is that sustainability is definitely an economic interest, because resources, what we build into our devices, is limited. I mean, this is something what we possibly were not that much aware several years ago, even though certainly there were indicators. But to be frank, resources are getting more and more limited. And this is actually why we see a lot of areas where this kind of circular economy is growing. What can we do with recycling? How can we make the products more long-lasting? And this is actually something what we already reflect very early in our product design. So we try to build, and this is also an argumentation of innovation, how can we develop and design the products so that they become, in regards to performance, long-lasting? So that means about processor performance, that means about storage opportunities, resolution, so that we can really meet not just the expectation of our customers today, but also in the future, so that you can update it accordingly, that you have the right performance, which possibly software in the future may demand. And so that is an approach where we try actually really to make the product design already a long-lasting. Second, it's certainly the question of technology is possibly get some damages over the use, and how can we make sure that those products can be repaired? And this is what we try to do as well. Mm-hmm. Using a design which is possible to replace components on the device so that you can really repair it and that it can be longer used. And I think the key point would be is what you have touched, it's this throwaway mentality. We know this claim of Geiz's Geil in Germany, which was a couple of years ago, a very, very popular advertising claim. I think that was a bit going into the wrong direction. So what we try to do as well is to keep a very good relation to the customers. So they should actually be satisfied with the service, the products Samsung is providing. So in the end of the day, sustainability means also customer loyalty. So if we do not meet the expectation of our customers, the relation is not sustainable. So what we try actually is to optimize and continuously improve our service so that the products are not just only repairable, that's for sure, but that we make the repair as easy as possible for our customers. They can wait for the repair in many cases. We have even mobile caravans which are driving around to collect the topics, the products which have to be repaired, so that we make it as easy as possible that those products, in case they are damaged, are repaired. So I wouldn't say there is a conflict. It's definitely something which is part of the business model and the business self-understanding of a company to keep the product sustainable also in the future. But you are absolutely right. I would say sustainability is not just has to be carried on one shoulder. It's an individual, I would say, contribution we can bring into this area. And everyone has to ask him or herself, what can I contribute? And it's certainly also a kind of more, I would say, more kind of understandable behavior, more self-reflecting behavior, what we need to get in the future as well.
Well, interesting points. And also like that you mentioned recycle and repair. And the third one is reduce, which is kind of the three R's that are used in this context. Well, thank you very much, Stefan. Tatjana, on to you. I was struck that you actually in your LinkedIn profile use the term sustainability. It says sustainability expert and hashtag sustainability at ING. Now, I have to tell you, when I think back of my corporate times and how one got to get these titles or roles, sometimes it seems to me that it's sometimes a result of market pressure or social tendencies more than it is necessarily that people believe in the idea. So I can't imagine an executive sitting in the boardroom saying, "Hey, we got to do something about sustainability," talking to his or her manager and say, "Take care of that." And the manager sees one of his or her team members going down the hall and walks out and puts a hand on the shoulder of the person and says, "Congratulations, you know, you are hereby named our sustainability lead. Now go out and do good things." And so let me ask you two questions, Tatjana. How did you get that title to be the sustainability lead at ING? And also the same question as I posed to Stefan. Why is ING doing this? What's in it for the company?
Well, again, thanks a lot, Roger, for inviting me to this panel. I really appreciate being part of this discussion. Maybe I start with your second question. The reason is actually very simple. We say, and I'm convinced, we do not have a planet B. Mm-hmm. So we have this one planet. We have our resources. Our behavior does not connect to what we know. And this is what Stefan said. We have a huge transformation ahead of us, a disruptive one, and I believe it will not, it's not a question of in overall, will there be less consumption, etc., but we will do it in a different way. And for ING, it's part of our DNA, actually similar as you said, a long time ago, years ago, we didn't call it sustainability or Nachhaltigkeit. But we just had fair prices. We didn't want to sell our customers. When you look at the financial industry, for example, we never had a lot of products. You have banks having products in their portfolio, 100 or 200 products, which is not a lot. And we have a half a day workshop for all new employees. We have 10 products, 5 on saving, 5 on investing, and it's very simple. If we don't understand the product, we don't want to sell it everyone. And you asked me how I got to the topic of sustainability. A great question. Thank you very much. Actually, we did that agile transformation, as you know, as a bank as a whole, from headquarters and globally. And I was a long time also responsible, as you said, for the topic of public affairs. So, of course, when you are in Berlin talking to the political stakeholders, sustainability, let's say 5 years from now, it became a bigger and bigger and more important topic. So actually, I chose it myself. This is something that's really great of ING. If employees pick up a topic and pitch to the board and say, you know, yes, we do have a lot of people on headquarter level, at group level, working on that topic, But we also need, and I did that with a colleague of mine, or actually with two, and we said we need some personnel here in ING Germany as well. Mm-hmm. And we got the opportunity to pitch a presentation at board level, and they approved it. Mm-hmm. So this is why I'm now with another colleague and support of some other colleagues as well, of course. We are responsible for sustainability only at the strategy department, because we really want to make it an integrated part of the strategy and also live it.
Mm-hmm. Impressive. Goes to show that they do take it seriously, and it's not just this, as I said, you know, maybe it's just this kind of pamphlet or appearance that you give yourself, but take it seriously. I like it. So, Jerome, let's move on to you on your LinkedIn account. I read that you're an entrepreneur, leader, and doer. I like that. And you also write, I'm passionate about strategic sustainability and ESG, the idea that social and environmental good can and should be combined with economic business good. Now, can you elaborate a little bit what you understand with the term strategic sustainability, and how exactly, basically the same question as before, how exactly do the two parts come together, you know, the social, economic, environmental good, and the economic and business good?
Yeah, hi everybody. The strategic part of it, and goes back to what Stefan mentioned as well, is really when you make sustainability truly part of your business model. Uh-huh. It's not just something, you know, lip service, a bit like in some cases, just, you know, CSR could be or was 10 years ago, where you had your business and you did a bit of, you know, something on the side just to kind of be able to tick a few boxes. Strategic sustainability is really looking at how can you weave in and really try and do good for, you know, your employees, and not just paying them well, but, you know, kind of even more than this, for their mental health at the moment. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of discussion around that. It's for the communities in which, you know, we operate, for the environment. You know, we're looking at, you know, tax. There's a lot of questions today around, you know, tax transparency and, you know, corporations demonstrating they're paying, you know, the right amount of taxes in the right location. So that's all part of it.
Yeah.
And so it's not just, you know, yes, you know, the trees are important, 100%, right? The environment is important, but it's the whole, the sum of it all. Uh-huh. And that's really when you look at all this and you look deep within your organization and say, okay, well, what are we actually doing? Find out, you know, your blind spots, where you do well, and work on that, right? Promote it, promote it internally, promote externally, because it's fine to promote the things you do well, and find out where you're not doing that well yet. And just like what Tatiana mentioned, work with the board, work with, you know, stakeholders at all levels, employees, to make sure that you try and, you know, advance those aspects that you're not doing too well today. And so that for me is the strategic aspect. It's not piecemeal, and it's not just a couple of, you know, let's go plant trees. It's how can we make something that is truly part of, you know, the fabric of the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you already mentioned the aspect of kind of like talking about what you do. And I think we will come back to that later, because it seems to me an important part of sustainability activities that you market it as well, that you kind of bring it out into the open. And Noemi, maybe that's also going to be part of the answer that you'll be giving to the question I'll be asking you, which is, you know, when I think of Accenture, I actually worked for them as well at one point. I looked it up again, over 500,000 people working for this huge consulting company. So it's an unbelievable number. I mean, there are even bigger companies, but 500,000 is like a crazy number. So kind of two-pronged question to you as well, Noemi. What is Accenture doing internally in regards to sustainability, kind of with this huge organization? And then is there something that Accenture is offering to clients where the company says, hey, we learned some things, we made ourselves more sustainable, we can offer that to you to both our benefits. I mean, we earn some money, but you become more sustainable. So this kind of internal, external perspective, what's Accenture doing?
Yes, happy to share that. And also thanks, Roger, for having me here today. It's a pleasure being here. And I think, yes, as you said, right, so we are a 500,000 FTE company. It is huge, it is massive, and the moments where we are committing to sustainability goals externally mm-hmm. and internally, we can really make an impact, right? So because it's a massive amount of FTE, it's a massive amount of computer infrastructure mm-hmm. That we are also having and building on. And this is exactly one angle where we are committing to reduce carbon emissions. Yeah, we are moving all our infrastructure and most of our applications to the cloud. Mm-hmm. And this means a reduction from carbon emissions to up to 84%. So that's mm-hmm. just from a computing power, something that we are doing. And then, I mean, for the rest, it starts with the mindset. It starts with the mindset. We are very strong in water reduction. Yeah, use as less water as possible. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of initiatives going on internally. We have also, how to say, goals of not using paper. So we are super strong mm-hmm. on this paperless offices. Or for example, I can give you the example for Switzerland. In Switzerland, we are about 2,000 FTEs, mm-hmm. But we only have around 100 workplaces. Yeah? The rest is sitting with the clients or working from home. I think we have 5 printers, for yeah, example, yeah. in the Swiss office. So we're really trying to have this paperless office. And we are always taking up this conversation in every employee conversation, in every, counselee conversation and discussion. It's a huge topic. It's in every community call. And this is also where we are trying to shift the mindset. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's for the internal thing. And for the external thing, yes, of course. I mean, it's part of, we always saying it's part of our DNA, because what we do is we help our clients to transform. And when we say transform, that also means we help them to achieve their sustainability goals through mm-hmm. digital transformation. So mm-hmm. that's really our main goal. And we do this, as I mentioned earlier, also through the footprint of IT, through cloud, through software, but also, for example, designing net zero supply chains. Yeah? Mm-hmm. We are looking into the target operating models, helping the clients to understand what future new skills their workforces need to develop, and also what new skills future leaders need to have to exactly achieve these sustainability goals. And that brings me back to my initial statement of it starts with the mindset. Yeah, it's really a circle, and it has to come together from mindset to all the instruments you are working with, the gadgets, and also the way you are working.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So that was our introductory round. Thank you for your initial statements. Now we'll stay among us so our listeners can write something in the chat. And I asked our fearless leader at the LLI, Kai, to maybe if we have time and if there's an opportunity to read out something from us. But dear listeners, you will not be able to participate verbally. It's among us. But we're open the floor for the panelists. Let me ask you something. You're all senior leaders in the industry and you're in consulting, so you talk to other people. How far are we in terms of mindset? Has the topic reached everybody in the executive ranks, on the board levels? And I'm asking this again specifically, not only on paper, not only that you have something, okay, we do sustainability as well, but is it your impression that indeed the idea and the goal and the kind of the ethics of it has sunken into the corporations? Anybody who would like to answer?
Maybe I just jump in. Thanks, Roger, and thanks also, Naomi, because I think you made a very valid point about the topic of mindset change, right? I think this is pretty essential. With the Fridays for Future movement. I think that there is, especially in the Gen Z generation, there is a very high attention on this topic, and they also question a lot. And I think from that point, it is a very valid and very valuable starting point, because it moves also the thinking in corporations. But well, I think you can imagine, since I'm working for Samsung, I certainly believe that technology can help to achieve these goals, either those from the UN with the SDGs, or on the other hand as well, what the European Union has actually promised, right, in regards to CO2 footprint to 2050, so that they become CO2 neutral within the European Union. And often I think the digitalization technologies are is considered as being a kind of a, well, fire accelerator. It's in many cases, I think, the technology behind which can help to really achieve those goals, because we have possibly more data what can be analyzed by artificial intelligence. We have more via the interconnectivity, the connectivity of products, we have a chance to, well, possibly even better steer. And in many cases, I think technology has been replaced or replaced different technologies. If you look at your mobile phone, it's a multifunctional tool now. Formerly, we had different products for functions which are now combined in one tool. So I think also there starts a bit of resource efficiency in this regards. But I think one of the most major topics which is important is that we educate people what technology can do and how we can use technology in order to overcome societal challenges, including sustainability aims, so that we can achieve those. More resource efficiency, optimized processes, digitalized processes, so that we have a better understanding about where we can achieve this better sustainability goals. And I think this is pretty important, because we see that sometimes this is not happening in Germany so far. We have a lack of digital understanding. We have a lot of kind of new profiles, new job profiles, which are actually coming from digitalization, but the education, which is actually the preparatory phase, is underdeveloped in this case. Mm-hmm. And I think this is pretty important, because as long as we do not do this in Germany or in Europe, people or companies who have understood that sustainability and digitalization is essential, they have the better staff, the better employees. And this is, I think, a very important part for competition for our companies as well, so that we can develop this transformation from internal, instead of just waiting till our market is gone to others.
Okay. Well, interesting points. Just we'll come back to technology for a moment. But you know, you now mentioned Fridays for Future and the young generation. But I'm wondering about the CEOs. I'm wondering about the people in charge, and they're older than Generation Z. Is it in their mindset? What is your feelings?
It is.
It is.
It has to be. Well, it is, because especially for large organizations, a lot of it is also driven by new laws, regulations, or soft law that, you know, reporting that you have to. So they have to be aware. So if, you know, if you've got any, you know, outside investment, you know, you will be, you know, there will be an angle which the company is analyzed, if nothing else. So there is clearly an understanding, like, the, you know, is there an understanding, and then a gaming as to what is the minimum amount that we could do and get away with? That's a real question. That is completely. And I represent a small organization, younger, that kind of grew fast. And we don't really have those sort of pressures yet. But it's interesting, because I had the CEO, discussion with the CEO, a bit like, you know, Tatiana, the one you had with the board. They said, well, I'm kind of, the CEO was interested in the topic, interested to understand how, and even if you really applied to the organization, it's like, well, we're 1,000 people. We're not, you know, 500,000 people like Accenture. We're 1,000 people, you know, does that apply to us? Like, what impact can we have, right? As a 1,000 people service company, we don't manufacture, we don't mind anything. So does that apply to us? But then what we also did is we surveyed the employees, and we asked everybody, you know, regards to sustainability. We're super vague. At this point, there was no program on sustainability. There was no corporate, you know, message around it. So out of the blue, we sent a message to everybody. Do you think we should do more about sustainability? Do you think we do just enough? Or do you think we do too much? And bear in mind, our employees had nothing to you know, we didn't really do anything. So they had no idea what to answer. But 80% replied, we should do a lot more. But really, we didn't even really do anything. But sort of from the employees, there was this demand to do more, regardless of what you're doing, but people want to do more. They want to have this purpose. They want to be involved, and understanding from the CEO. And then we're able to kind of, you know, between the two, get moving and get things done, because both had, you know, the mindset. That's a very good point. I mean, the mindset to get things done, even if it's not easy.
Tatiana and Noemi, you agree with that? It's the mindset is there on the top. They all understand it.
I mean, probably the mindset is there. They understand it. Mm-hmm. And Jerome, I think to your point, yes, they have to do something because more and more regulations are coming out. But I think it is still on the marketing level. Yeah. I mean, and that's the sad thing about it. Yeah, but because for them, I think they have the challenge of what is the value for me and for my company of doing it. Yeah. The moment they see a value in it, in really transforming to become a sustainable company, then it's easier. So then they have an incentive, yeah, because they are still in the shareholder thinking and that they need this value component to be fulfilled. Yeah. And that's not so easy. Yeah. And then you also need to find answers and how can I do it? What can I do it? Is it traveling less? I mean, yes, COVID helped on that one, definitely. is it, as I mentioned earlier, something like moving to the cloud, or is it something super industry specific? Stefan, to your company, every industry, every company has their own possibilities to change and to drive and to commit and also to do something, yeah, to achieve these goals. But it's really a mixture of how can I drive value out of it? Do I really have to do it? Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. Do I really want to do it? Maybe not. And then also, I think on top of it, there is this bottom-up pressure from the younger generations. And I think that's kind of the mixture where the C-levels are in, not knowing how, but needing to do. And that's not so easy, yeah, to kind of find the right starting point.
Find the balance. Tatiana, do you see that as well?
Well, I rather agree with Naomi. I would go even one step further and say it's not at the top of the mind of the CEOs and of the management board. I think what we see right now, and this is a first really important step, that it's getting there, it's getting on the board table. It's getting discussed, and board members from the Ryan company sees that they will not get around of it. Mm-hmm. They need to do something. Mm-hmm. But I think this is what we see at the moment. They have the feeling they have to do something. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies are going out and doing their statements. And for some of them, I think it's also really valuable because then you see that they are maybe industry leaders and others are following, or it has consequences for the market. And this is, I think, really positive. I think what's really different for that trend, maybe in comparison, for example, for digitization or something like that, the one thing is that Naomi said that in the head of the board members and senior managers, and also the people within the companies, when you talk about sustainability or think about sustainability, you always have in mind is it costs money for me. So I need to invest. But we need to shift that thinking into a thinking that means sustainability means profit in products, in business models, and also means future. And I also think what's really important is that it's not one company or one sector that needs to change. But we as a society, as global society, mm-hmm. need to change the whole system. So mm-hmm. we have external mm-hmm. factors like the CO2 price, which is not integrated into our system. So we sell meat, which is much too cheap, right? Mm-hmm. And these things are starting now. We need the regulators. We need regulation in this topic. Mm-hmm. We need the governments, we need the national climate plans, and then of course we need the sectors and we need the companies and we need every single person. I think this is not a topic where you can say, you know, It's the companies that have to do the job. It's the regulators that have to do the job. It's the customers who, you know, should stop eating meat or something like that. It's everyone, and we need to do it together. Otherwise, we're going to fail.
Couldn't agree more. I'd like to follow up on the idea of what's in it for me. What's the value? You touched on that as well. Steffen, you started with that by saying, hey, we see as an economic need. So I guess we all agree, everybody understands it's important because it's a political issue. There's kind of like a social pressure. So we have to somehow do it. But to get beyond the marketing level, Noemi, as you said, where's the value? So they're struggling to find that. And Steffen, you started out by saying when I digitalize things, I can reduce use of natural resources. And Naomi, you said last time, when I digitalize things, I have more information. The information, again, I can use, can put use to the goal of being more sustainable because I'm more knowledgeable in whatever area it may be, how I can run my business and so on. But is there, are there other drivers for companies that work towards this goal of being economic, being profitable with sustainability? Is it technology where we're doing more technology and that will help us to reconcile the two? Or is it maybe like you kind of said, maybe it's the mindset of the individual employees do more to raise and change their mindset? What do you think are the levers that companies have, and what are they using or should be using? Or is that a strange question?
All the levers you mentioned are valid, and we talked about even the employees and employees now, and regardless of their age, really want to work for a company that has a purpose, right? They don't want to just work for a bank. They want to work for, a bank that does good, right? They don't want to just work for, manufacturer. They want to work for a manufacturer that does good. And it gives an edge in terms of hiring, in terms of retaining people, which, again, hiring has a cost. And so if you can hire, better talent for the same salary, that's actually a good outcome for the company. If you can keep good talent a bit longer because you have that purpose, not because you increase salaries every 5% every year, that's a good outcome for the company.
Absolutely.
So there's really, but you have to, you really have to look at it specifically to your organization and learn from what other people are doing, like this sort of session, like in your sector, but also in your company size and geography, because there's different flavors to it, especially in how you get there, depending on, again, the board and the makeup of, the decision makers and, but there are genuine and tangible benefits at all levels of the economic, social, and governance or aspects here.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I want to hook on a bit from Naomi once again when she has said that there needs to be a more stronger mindset on sustainability, or maybe more, I would say, commitment to a sustainability on the CEO level. I think what we need is to differentiate as well as a bit on the status of the company itself. Mm-hmm. So if we are a big company which exists in Germany already for many, many years, even decades, well, we have some sort of heritage of manufacturing plants, production lines, etc. So for those companies, I think the management is definitely aware of it, but it is more difficult to really transform. And when we speak about transformation, it means what do I have to improve to become more sustainable without losing actually my business or not eroding my business? So it's a process, I would think. I mean, what we could see in the automotive industry over the last just 5, 6, 7 years, there came a new player in the market, which could start from scratch. And I think the management in this company was somebody who was working in a mobile payment business. So nothing really to do with the traditional automotive business. But with this push in the market, there happened a fully and very massive transformation, because just a couple of years ago, we saw that the other traditional manufacturers are now starting into this business as well more and more. Okay. So I think what is important and essential is that we have the right people in the companies with the right understanding of how technology can transform and also overcome these societal challenges by using it. Instead of just being a user, it has to be a creator, right? So that you use this technology. And this is, I think, in the past, we had this kind in Germany, this kind of study profile, where we said we want to have engineers with a competence in economics. So they became this sort of economic engineers. I think what we need is to have digital engineers. So engineering, knowing about the technology and understanding digital logics and mechanisms so that I can use this in transforming businesses. And it's important that we have these people, not only in the management, we have to have this on the normal employee working level, because only via this, with this commitment, this understanding and this competence, I can transform the company from inside, from internally, because I have a better understanding how processes can actually move. And it's very important that we have these digital engineers with a certain entrepreneurial spirit, because that is the motivation. This is a driver in order to transform traditional processes. I can only say, and this is possibly a bit of Samsung advertisement, I'm responsible in the company for corporate affairs, which means it's public affairs, government relations, and on the other side, it's citizenship. So we try actually by social entrepreneurship competitions, motivate young entrepreneurs to act in a zebra startup, which means it's a combination of social entrepreneur combined with profitability. Mm-hmm. And this kind of combination is actually a kind of a model where we can say sustainability as part of the DNA can be profitable. And this is certainly for startups easier than for big companies, but maybe this is leading into a great synergy. If a big company cannot that much quick transform, they can cooperate with startups. And this may be something which helped them actually to find ideas, to generate ideas, and also to think about how by cooperation I can transform without running in this massive risk to totally change something from scratch.
Totally agree, Stefan. And I think the challenge for these large companies always, it costs me a lot of money. I have to invest a lot of money. I don't want to risk it. You know? I'd rather start small and tiny with the little steps of digital decoupling, or however you want to call it. Everyone has a different term to describe it. But I think, you know, there is like, there are frameworks, there are approaches how you can kind of go through your company to look at the sustainability topic. And I think there are, I would say there are five main topics you can look at, right? So one is the industry topic. What is my industry confronted with the sustainability topic? And then the second one is look inside, look at your cloud and your software and your infrastructure. So, and then you have like the third level, which is looking into the value chain. Yeah, where within my value chain can I address the sustainability topic? And then I think the fourth one we mentioned quite a couple of times is this responsible workforce and the new skills. I think you also have to upskill your employees on the sustainability topic. You know, how they can work, what does it mean, how to also apply a new way of working, how to become a attractive future workplace to also attract the younger generation. I think, Jerome, also to your comment earlier on, yeah, that they want to work there and they want to continue working there, and it's a cool brand, yeah, taking care of that topic. And then I think that the fifth value lever you definitely have to look at is the sustainability analytics ledger, where you say, where's my data that I can learn about sustainability? What is it where I can understand where my company can drive an impact, and then also measure it and then also report it? And I think that's a framework. These are four value levers you can apply and you can look through your company. And I think you don't have to do all of them, right? Yeah. Because that would be the major thing, but you can start with one and go through it step by step.
Very much.
So there are some recipes.
It's not like hopeless. I love it. Sorry for interrupting. I thought you were done. Let me introduce another aspect that is important to us here at the Liquid Legal Institute, and we're about legal. So usually, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. Some of you aren't either, but Let's talk about the legal perspective on this. We already mentioned, Jerome, you said there's a lot of regulations coming out. So, you know, there's pressure on the companies just to do things a certain way and take that into account. But let me ask, what can the legal department do? You know, all these big companies, they have in-house legal departments. Now, do the lawyers say, not my topic? They have to do it if it's a regulation, but is there something that the legal industry or the in-house departments or the law firms can do above and beyond regulations in order to kind of push that forward or do good things?
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of, you know, legal together with some of the other functions that the governance engine mm-hmm. of an organization, right? Mm-hmm. And they have the duty to look forward and keep the company on the right track from a legal standpoint, of course, but they should, you know, look beyond this. And if you take just kind of a legal, you know, quite a narrow view of the role of the legal department, they should, of course, understand, you know, all the applicable laws and regulations, and so you stay within that kind of, you know, the white zone, but they should also understand what are the gray zones, so what is coming, the you know, soft law or pressure, and start thinking about it. And you might have marketing and HR coming at sustainability is just a term. It's an umbrella term to say, let's do good in all these different functions. And everybody has to look at it, right? So HR as a function has to look at what is our role within this. And so legal also has to, you know, legal department has to say, okay, what is our role within the sustainability aspect? Now, more concretely, for example, we've asked our legal department to look at our policies again, and not just say, yeah, we have a policy for this. But let's look at it again and say, but is it really meaningful? Is it clear? Is it, you know, mm-hmm. is it really what we mean to do? Mm-hmm. And so that's just a very practical example of how, you know, legal actually looked at, you know, policies, for example, and engaged, of course, with the teams like data,
okay.
HR, you know, so they engage with IT or HR to work on this. That's just my example.
So Stefan raised his hand, but I also want to say, want to give Tatjana a chance later. Yeah. So Stefan first, then Tatjana.
Okay, then I will very quickly. I mean, we spoke about technology, right? This is actually something which I, in my view, can help really to become more sustainable. And when we speak about technology, we speak immediately about a lot of regulation. So if we speak about data, we speak about privacy, we speak about security, if we speak about artificial intelligence, we speak about ethics, we speak about all that kind of topic, which is legal. It's a legal issue. So imagine if we speak, for example, on predictive maintenance, what we know from Industry 4.0, which is very, very much leveraging, in many, many cases, sustainable goals. If we speak about this in the consumer area, so how can a smart home help to do predictive maintenance in the future so that products are early identified before they are broken, so that you can really have a better spare part management, you can optimize your service teams, you can optimize the travel routes the service team has to do, because you can analyze data in regards to maybe anomalies if the performance of a device is not really the best, then what does it mean for the future damage of the device? So if you have this and you want to use it, you have to ask yourself as a company, if you want to offer that service, are you compliant with privacy laws, GDPR? Is it correct what you use in regards to IT security? Is it correct if it comes to the point of artificial intelligence and using this data? So I think this is something where legal is very importantly used and needed in order to assess those kind of new business models or new business services in regards to compliance with the existing law. And sometimes I think it's also important to make, well, or educate also the policy sector to say, look, if we want to offer that service, we need to have that regulatory framework. And this is something where I think this future focus of how maybe the environment and the ecosystem has to be changed.
Mm-hmm. Tatjana.
To pick up on the topic, two main topics come to my mind. The first thing is applicability, and the second one is harmonization. So what we struggle a lot within ING is that we have so many different regulations according to our countries and mm-hmm. where we're acting in. So modernizing or harmonizing those legal requirements would help us a lot in implementing our sustainability strategy. For example, when you look at the topic of energy labels, even within Europe, you have a concept that is congruent for or is applicable to Europe. But when you look at the energy labels in Netherlands, in Spain, in Germany, it's totally different. It's not comparable. And also then, if you look at the data availability, of course, I think there the legal and also the regulator can do a lot by helping to making those relevant data available, which are necessary then to actually bring those methodologies into life and then make sustainability work. And also the applicability. So of course we need some regulations, but then it's you have more and more text and regulations, and they are not always working. When you look at the internet, especially working with each other, right? So they are not always harmonized with each other. Mm-hmm. And you have more and more global aspects. When you look, for example, at the Lieferkettengesetz in Germany, how will that work? You have global supply chains, so you need global legal requirements in a way, even though we have a system that is not, that cannot scope with that requirement. I think we have a lot to do there.
I think Naomi, please.
Coming back to the legal topic, I think the legal department in a company can make such a difference and also drive an impact, because it's not only making sure the company does comply with the regulatory requirements, but it's also really looking at their service catalog and then looking super deep into the front offices and into the business. Are they really also considering the sustainability topic? And this goes beyond finance, right? So this goes deep down into third-party risk management, looking into this external contracts and services, but also I think, Jerome, you mentioned it as well earlier, to the HR topic and so on. And I think that the it's totally underestimated how much impact a legal department can make to the sustainability topic. And what I see a little bit in the industry is that there the awareness is not, it's not there yet. Because I think it's not only on the C-level, as we discussed at the beginning of the panel, it's in every department of a company. And I mean, we are here in the liquid legal topic and call, so that's why I brought up the legal department of a company.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, this may be a good time to look in our chat. I'll do that right now. There's not too much going on, which I take to be a sign that our discussion is so lively that people are just fascinated and mesmerized.
But what are they? There are some. There are some.
Yes, questions. Please, Guy, go ahead.
So there's the first one coming from Bernhard. He likes the discussion very much, and he asked for the incentives. So what are the incentives that are currently driving this change? And are the current incentives that we see from politics or from customers, from employees, as we discussed here, are they insufficient? Should we do more on this side?
On the incentive side, all right. Yeah, question to the panelists.
Well, I think this incentivize could be something where you see if you have some business models which are profitable on the other hand as well by being sustainable, then I think it makes sense to look deeper into this. So that would be my point. And this is actually why
to use it to make money, right? Show them how they can do not only money, but bring their business forward, branding, employee attractiveness and stuff. Yeah, we need to make the connection.
But as I said as well, if you can optimize a specific process by being more sustainable using technology, then it helps you already. So, I mean, imagine this kind of predictive maintenance model that would lead to a massive opportunity to optimize processes, reduce actually storage costs, possibly of waste, of spare parts, for example. And this is a kind of a process what we see already in other industries. But how can this be implemented in a company? This is a question, and this takes time for certain to investigate. But I think these kind of approaches may help to incentivize, because you have a chance to bring your company forward.
Mm-hmm. We actually do, maybe to add on that, we brought some sustainability products to our wholesale banking clients to the market. So we actually reward our clients if they if they want to, of course, but for their sustainability rating. That could be that we either define some criteria for sustainability, and then we say we have a sustainability improvement loan, which mm-hmm. means if their sustainability rating goes up, that since goes down, and the other way around, the interest
rate.
And this is actually really thankful taken from the market, and we have our approach is to actually offer a sustainable product offering for each of the classical product, and then to inspire, mobilize what we were talking before, our customers to choose the sustainable option because they see their profit in that product.
Awesome. Kai, do you want to give us another question?
There's another one, because you asked, okay, what are the regulations, what are the laws? But there's also something published by the UN, the 17 sustainability goals, and they are listed here in the chat, 1 to 17, and they're interesting to read.
I saw that was impressive. Can you read out some?
Goal number one is no poverty. Number two is zero hunger, good health, well-being, quality education, gender equality, and so forth. Is this something you implemented also in your respective departments and companies?
And you were talking, so one of them, I think 15, is actually about access to justice, for example. So, you know, that's also a direct example of how a legal department can just, you know, pro bono enforce those sort of things and help access to justice in their jurisdiction. So, yes, the idea of SDG is not every company is going to be able to affect all of those, but we should really try and affect as many as possible. But really, this is guidance. But this is guidance, and you know, part of the UN Global Compact and a lot of things that the UN does. But it's one of the challenges. I don't know how the other people feel, but it's kind of, it lacks teeth. It's great, and to some people, to the board, it's like, yeah, okay, it's you know, it's goodwill, but it's like, you know, show me the money type thing. It's hard to link the two. So the SDGs are great, but they're directional and kind of, and every time I bring them up in a business setting, I have to kind of apply directly to, I have to bring them back down to earth a little bit.
If I may, one last question, Roger.
Please go ahead.
So the last one was from Nora. This one is from Tatiana. She asked about this circular economy, and Steffen, you brought that up, but I know the term of cradle to cradle. So do the others also have this concept of cradle to cradle?
Well, I can speak for ING, and of course we talked about the different sectors during this discussion, and as a bank, as we finance different sectors, we have to cover all those sectors. And actually, we are being headquartered in Amsterdam and in the Netherlands. There, the topic of circular economy is a step further, so to say, than in Germany. So we have if you look at our website, we have a great concept and a clear commitment towards circular economy. And where we see our responsibility is there, is that we actually finance those business models and those startups. Because here, we have a lot of new companies coming up. And actually, I talked to a company today, also from the Netherlands, who is furnishing floors. And they say, you know, we take the floors, if you rebuild a house, we take the old floors because they're valuable for us. But then he also said, and this is the shift I was talking before, you have to shift you have to transform the whole supply chain, right? So for now, if you modernize your floor, you're not thinking of, you think, okay, you have to get rid of it, but you're not thinking about that the person who will actually bring the new floor takes the old one. So this is new thinking is in designing of processes is needed here. And we need to change our habits and our behavior. So I think there's still a way to go, but it's a great topic.
It's a perfect statement for the end, because we reached the top of the hour. I would have liked to ask each of you a final, really provocative question, but we're more important that we end on time here. Let me tell you how much I enjoyed this. It was tremendous to hear you interact and share your expertise and your knowledge. I really love the engagement. I hope you, the audience, enjoyed it as well. I hope you'll join in next time again, when most likely we will talk about access to justice, and the title will be Sue Me If You Can. I hope to see you all back then again, and I hope wish you a wonderful weekend, and thanks for being on the show.